Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. In the work of educators, one area that continues to challenge schools is to make sure that we're helping students in the best way possible, by preventing problems for them further in the future. Now, more than ever, educators are looking to researchers to find the most effective interventions and provide them with the guidance of what to do with the needs that they see in their classrooms every day. Our guest today, Gary Schaefer, is one of those researchers. He is also an author striving to create materials and resources to help educators and leaders do the job to the best of their ability and to help students succeed. Not only does he have years of experience as a school psychologist and academic, but he also brings the perspective as a student who received special education services as a child and has made it his life's work to help make sure that students get the help that they need. In our conversation, we talk about MTSS and special education and how leaders can utilize school psychologists. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Well, today on our podcast, we are pleased to welcome Gary Schaefer, who is an author and researcher and teaching at the college level all about mental health in schools and school psychology and probably array of different topics around MTSS as well. And so, Gary, just why don't you just start out telling us a little bit about yourself and kind of what you're up to these days?
Yeah, my name is Gary Schaefer. I'm a school psychologist by trade. I practiced 10 years across state, hospital, and agency settings, and at the university level as well with Niagara University. In that capacity, I was engaged in researching and exploring preventative practice models and writing books. I wrote through books on multi-tiered system support and preventative practice models. So that experience has really been fulfilling in my life.
I know that part of, you know, us getting in contact was just through your work and through some of the research you're doing. And so I just kind of want to talk about, like, for you as a kind of your understanding of MTSS, like, why, I mean, this is kind of an area where you've dove into the research and you clearly are really passionate about it. Mm-hmm. For you, where did you, like, when did you start, like, this journey of, like, this is going to be what I want to write about and help other people understand all that? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Niagara really, at our university, I was at Niagara as a student, and they really instilled upon me preventative practices and preventative practice models with Dr. Lisa Kolonowski-Press and Dr. Augustiniak, who are still currently with the university. And the model was, you know, at the time, I'm also a mental health counselor, so I was receiving that background as well. So the model was meet students or people in general where they are at, try to prevent the disorder or disease from advancing or deficit from advancing, and, you know, really remediate it and not operate off of the medical model, which is the medical model says we diagnose and then we treat a person with a disability. It's very biologically based. Niagara and USF, where I am currently, which is the University of South Florida, really emphasizes the social model, which is it's not a disability per se. It's a mismatch between societal expectations and not accommodating for those expectations by providing differentiated instruction. When I got interested in that was around 2012, you know, in 2008 to 2012, my interest really advanced in that rapidly. Because as a person with a disability, I said, you know, I wonder if my math disability could have been prevented. Would it have remediated those? And I think that through the research, we know, number one, with ADHD and with a learning disability, the brain is neuroplastic. So we can remediate deficits. We know that at a preschool age for students with attentional deficits that we can reduce or eliminate the need for medication or minimize the need for ADHD medication, maybe a lower dosage. We also know that through brain studies by Fletcher that intensive intervention or advanced intervention at tier two and three, tier three, significantly change brain functioning and alter the brain's white matter to better accommodate and grow and account for reading. As opposed to students with reading deficits, we know that they don't show that growth in white matter on the left side of the brain. So that was my main particular interest, is can we prevent this from future students going through what I had to go through as a child? And it started in about 2008.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's, you know, I talked to a lot of different educators and experts, and I think we can all kind of tie back to different moments of our own educational experience and how just striving to do better. And like, now that we know better, let's do better. And so you talk about the word preventative and like, why, and you sort of explored this a little bit, but like, you know, why is it key for educators to understand that really MTSS is about being preventative?
You know, with prevention, it's key because it prevents, I think it's critical for educators and teachers especially to understand that once a school psychologist places that label on a child, it is a significant term. It is not taken lightly. It was never taken lightly to disable a child or label a child as disabled, because I'm changing their trajectory or their life almost, you know, whether they buy into that or not, you know, and how their parents adapt or not really depends on, you know, the child and their resources. So prevention to me really, really means that we are helping the child to remediate deficits and providing appropriate instruction so that they do not reach future difficulties, and it alters the trajectory of their life, you know, in a positive manner. You know, we teach them skills for adaptational success rather than adaptational failure. And by that, I mean that they're able to adaptationally succeed and adapt and develop some grit to overcome their deficits rather than perfect and learn helplessness. And once they participate and see that success at a tier two or tier three level, their thinking might change to, I can actually do this. I can actually succeed, as to I can actually fail. And I think that with the refer test place model, it was just, hey, you're going to fail and we're going to watch you fail. And I think that's what happened to me when I was a young child. So prevention is key because it leads to, it avoids children having to go through a lot of emotional turmoil that you don't see when there's a diagnosis or a classification. It allows them to be who they want to be and who they strive to be. And the best opportunity for that.
Yeah, I think, well, and I think your perspective is really valuable because, you know, like, we want to be clear that, you know, MTSS isn't special education, right? Like, I think there's a lot of times that we can hear, like, you know, as an early educator, like trying to understand those things, the differences and like what it's about. Like, for you, when you're explaining MTSS to people or explaining like sort of how that integrates with special education, how do you go about kind of explaining that?
Well, you know, I often see them as separate models. I don't integrate. A lot of districts, and depends on the district and administration, go about and utilize the MTSS model for database decision-making to go into special education. I think that's the wrong idea, because that's that medical line of thinking of, okay, we're using this as a model to diagnose and classify a child with a deficit. It should be used as a model to remediate and provide database decision-making for equitable decisions for marginalized populations within our community of children that are participating in our school system. So it comes down to equity and inclusion, actually. Rather than, you know, sustaining a diagnosis and exclusion. And that has traditionally been the path. So I think they're two separate constructs, and I think districts need to adapt to that idea. Certainly, the data does provide helpful information, like a CBM or a curriculum-based measure provides good information as to whether that child is able to respond to evidence-based intervention, which does help with a classification. There's no doubt about that. But I'm not viewing it solely through the lens of special and general education. I'm viewing them as two separate mm-hmm. models. My main goal as a school psychologist, and I think educators' main goal would be, I'd have to hope that anybody would think that the goal is to help children succeed.
Something to consider is with special education, like there are laws and certain things to protect, mm-hmm. you know, students that are in need of that support, right? Like yes. it exists because there weren't needs being met. And we, you know, sure. there are certain disabilities and things like that, that like the students need a special plan for how they can be successful. But oftentimes what I, you know, and when I sat on, you know, IEP meetings and different things as an educator, like we wanted to celebrate progress of those students, of like the idea would be at some point you don't need this plan. Like you can right. graduate from the services because you've made that progress or you've have those things in place that you no longer need those services. Like that's the whole idea. But mm-hmm. it is that fact of like, if you are, you know, have some diagnoses or have certain things that impede or are barriers to your learning, like we want to help that in place. And so, but I think with the MTSS, mm-hmm. the idea would be then to like, you know, prevent students, like, cause maybe they don't need that extensive plan, but maybe exactly. they just needed some area to help fill in the gap early. And like the earlier you can do it, the better, right? am I saying that right?
Yeah. No, you said it exactly right. And you hit upon a couple of points that I want to touch upon. And certainly it's not to exclude special education. I'm a special education teacher, an English teacher. That's what I got my majors in first. I actually taught for several years, long-term and short-term subbing and developing, you know, learning lesson plans and all that stuff. So I took special education very serious and my job as a special educator very serious. And I wanted to give those students that absolutely needed the most support, the most intensive services and individualized supports I can. And what tends to happen when we force kids into special education at a quicker rate than they should be is, number one, the school psychologist gets flooded. And then the school psychologist tends to write more generalized reports, which then impacts the special educator, who then is overflooded and the individualized instruction is more generalized. Our special educators need, and they thrive off of doing, that's their specialty, individualized instruction tailored to the needs of the student with a disability. And if their students aren't mm-hmm. getting that, that's really hindered. And let's face it, a number of students who go on, most students who go into special education do not get out of it. We know mm-hmm. that statistics. And we know that, you know, we talk about teachers, you know, exiting the field and losing their jobs. Well, it does cost a significantly more amount of money to educate a special education student. That's not to say we don't want to do that. We want to support these kids the best we can. But it is to say that if we keep on doing this, like let's just say the students, I think in New York State, the last statistic I saw, it's like 2,500 educate yearly a general education student versus 6,500 for a special education student. Well, you add that up to 18 years. And that's a teacher's job. And so I think that as a school psychologist and as an educator, we need to see a broader picture here about not only how it influences the kids, but how it influences our instruction and then impacts the wider community in terms of our taxpayers. We have a responsibility. Yeah. We're taking people's money from the taxpayers. We got to provide a good quality education. MTSS isn't perfect per se. I wish it was. Every model already does. But it does provide mm-hmm. us a better opportunity to provide equitable advancements and opportunities for students with disabilities or deficits and for marginalized communities.
Well, I think what is interesting to kind of think about in all of this is that, like, you know, MTSS in theory is really great. I think it's sometimes of how it's implemented is mm-hmm. where sort of the imperfections come in, because yes. we vary how we sort of implement it. And so it's like how we choose like screeners and different things, the methodology that you use within the whole system, like, you know, doing it really well is very important. I mean, setting it up from the groundwork so that when you do the screeners, identifying, you know, what buildings in your district need the support and need the personnel or need, you know, having a strong tier one curriculum, like all of that stuff impacts then the number of students that are able to be supported and then able to be, you know, I think the idea with MTSS of just like, you know, having that targeted support. And then if students need that more tier intervention, right. And if the, what things that are not working, right. Like if you're continuing to like, you know, make plans and things, you know, and you've discovered that a student needs further help or more intense or be diagnosed or any of those kind of things, like, you know, all doing all those steps first, like you said, the three tiers, I think then like that's the effective way, because then you're not wasting time or even personnel or, you know, all of that stuff is allocated well. And that's where I think that's part of like, when you talk about like using taxpayer funds, like, you know, then your special education teachers are the ones getting the students that need that individualized support.
But yeah, essentially when we go into special education, what we're saying is that, you know, we know that the interventions have not worked and that the student is not going to advance at the rate of their peers. And whether it be math, whether it be reading, whether it be writing, whether it be behavior, we're saying there's something biologically based that might be preventing them from learning at that rate. And that is preventing them from advancing for their peers. And that's why the special education teacher is so useful, because they are able to navigate that individually with each student. But when we flood the system, we take that and deprive it away from our special education teacher.
It really does come back to like using those resources really well so that you can help the most students, right? Because like, I think that, you know, it's not about filling the classroom, you know, identifying, oh, there's so many students that we miss, right? That need special education. There's not that. I think a lot of times is if we're not doing the practice well, then kids get identified that don't need to be identified. Mm-hmm. And then kids that need to be identified aren't, because there's, you know, triangulation of data and, you know, not using, you know, norm-based assessments or whatever, you know, the misstep is. And so I think that that's why like really having a strong foundation of what MTSS is, having a strong practice, building that within a district, within a school, you know, having those research-based practices and methodology and all of the things really will help then in the long run, help those special education teachers be able to do their job really well and to not burn them out. Because I mean, and I know that students get placed into special education that don't need it, or because there's no other place for whether behavior issues or other things, you know? And so like that, which is really sad, because, you know, then the students who probably need the most help, maybe that don't show it, like they don't get the help that they need. And then I, you know, that's the part that always breaks my heart. How do we help schools and teachers and administrators and leaders do this well? Like what are, let's start out with like talking about like, what are some barriers that you see in your work with MTSS?
I think that the number one is, you know, a misunderstanding for what MTSS is. I think that's the number one thing, is that, you know, teachers and administrators really don't have that foundational understanding, or maybe their education did not provide that to them at the collegiate level. And I think we do need to do a better job at that, at the teaching level for our teachers. I think we're doing a disservice to them by not, and our administrators by not introducing them properly to MTSS and more advanced instruction in the area. I get that their plates are full. But I would highly doubt any of my friends who are teachers would say, hey, I don't want to prevent a disability from happening and welcome that instruction if they had the time. Secondly, you know, aside from training and instruction at the collegiate level, I think that there's time, you know, issues in the schools. Everybody's on a different schedule. They're running all around. They got a lot of pressure on them politically now, unfortunately, which is playing into them and distracting them from what they unfortunately need to do. I also think that, you know, funding is an issue too. So I think that, again, let me sum it up, Larissa. it comes down to getting the teachers trained properly at the university and post-secondary level, ongoing training, which can be difficult, which leads to affordability concerns from a district standpoint, which leads to time, funding, and resources concerns, right? Mm-hmm. But districts, you know, who do it well, there's a district out here called Pasco that does a really great job with MTSS, or is at least really trying hard. And I seen that, and it brought like a beam of hope to my eyes, because I'm like, they're just rocking out right now with great tools and a great structure and looking for data for equity. Schools that do it well are facing less of a burden than they did before from what the data says. And from what I've been reporting personally on the ground level, people are seem to be happy, and they seem to be more likely to get on board once they see that success.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and that's a huge part, is just that I think visibility of MTSS, like successful MTSS implementations for districts, mm-hmm. and realizing that, like, you know, in a smaller district, it's a smaller wheel that has to turn, right?
Yes.
Your change that you enact may happen a little bit quicker, right? You're able to train your people a lot faster because there's less of them, right? You know, I've worked for a small district versus a big district, and like the wheel just, it's a larger wheel that takes, yes, a longer time to turn. And so I think that there is that understanding oftentimes, you know, with leaders, is really just like, you can make a decision, hey, we're going to implement MTSS, but to see the results of that may lag behind for longer than you would want, because just as far as like training everyone in the foundational understanding, and, you know, and then building a system for like, as you have new employees and when your structure changes, all of those, there's a lot of like infrastructure understanding that has to happen, and decisions making. And so I think you're right, is that like, there's just so many things outside of the control of the leaders, whether it be elections and, mm-hmm. you know, politics and law policies, and then also funding. There's so much of that in every state, I think, battles it in different ways of just like how they're allocated funds, and whether you're in a district that has a lot of funds or one that doesn't have very much, like, mm-hmm. I think there's factors that are in play. So, I think you're kind of spot on those. So then what would you say to administrators or leaders if they're wanting to get started with this work, like what would you give them as, encouragement, or even just like trying to like help them understand, like what are some steps that they can take?
The number one thing I would say to any school psychologist, leader, and administrator is you got to garner your referent power to influence the system that you're in. By that, I mean, you need to garner the respect of your peers. You know, you could have all legitimate power you want in terms of like, I'm an administrator, I'm going to, you know, really steer the ship. But ultimately, you know, if you don't have respect for your staff and you haven't displayed empathy for their concerns and work together with them, you're not going to get them on the ball with using MTSS or a newer model. Because it's not going to show that you bought in from a theory standpoint or a theoretical standpoint or a moral standpoint. It shows that you bought in from a maybe legal standpoint or we have to do this standpoint. So for any school psychologist listening, that's probably the hardest part, is to garner referent power. And for any administrator too. The second part is for administration. They really do need to utilize their school psychologists and leverage them and their expertise more. I don't know how many times the field's got to say this, but we're not testing machines. We were mandated to the schools in 1975 and became testing machines as a result of, the Education for All Handicapped Children Act. And, you know, our interests before that were more on consultation, more on counseling, and they continue to be that. And the research is showing that. But on the contrary to what school psychologists want to do, the research for the past 40 to 50 years has shown that 50% of their time are doing special education assessments, which is kind of traumatic, because it's like, here's a field that potentially had a great deal in starting the movement towards preventative practice, and they can't even participate in it. And that's self-defeating. So you really do got to leverage your school psychologist to ask them how they can help in different ways other than assessing children for special education, what they can do with database decision-making, and how they can inform research informed practice, because we are researchers, right? And you know, we can tell you what programs work and what don't, or what's great for reading and what isn't for reading. All of us have that expertise. You know, in Pascal, you know, they were doing a lot of cool things with their school psychologists in terms of using them as leaders for referent power. They had school psychologists on MTSS teams, and they were using some as, you know, in various roles. It was enlightening to see. It was enlightening to see them actually be able to do what they wanted to do. But also there was that split. They had the district role of MTSS leaders, but then they had the ones that were working in the school districts, or the schools that were more garnered towards a special education assessment. And I think that maybe those folks maybe were maybe feeling the crunch a little bit more than others.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think that that's really true. Anytime that you put somebody in a role that's like, oh, your job is only going to be this small part of like what you were trained to do. Exactly. It's very defeating. You know, I mean, I can tell as like a former assessment coordinator. Like I was an instructional coach, but I also served as the assessment coordinator. And that was like my least favorite part of my job. I did it fantastically, but it was like not the most fun part. And so it was like, but then if that's, it took up a majority of my time, a lot of my time at different points in the year. And I just think, you know, a school psychologist has so much knowledge and insight in how you can help students. And I think that like because I think of resources aren't just like money and person, like it's actually the knowledge and expertise of your personnel. And, you know, having them be a prominent person on the MTSS committees or MTSS groups is fantastic. And I think that that's a great perspective to have. Mm-hmm. I like what you said about referent power, because I do think there's the idea of like an administrator comes in and is like, well, I'm the administrator. So like everyone is just going to listen to me because I'm the leader. And there's like to a point, like, you know, like to a point, but it's also like that idea of like when you have the respect and trust. Cause I think I heard, I forget who the conversation was with, but I think it was Alan Coulter talked about how building that trust and buy-in with your team is so essential with your MTSS work, because you really have to trust that everyone is doing their part to make this happen. And as a leader, like there is a bit of like, you have to have the trust of your team, and the team has to have your trust as well. And so I think that they're like to buy in, to move forward, it's really to build that relationship and trust among the staff in order to make big change. And I think that's like any change in a school, you have to have that kind of trust moving forward. So.
Yeah. I think what it comes down to is Augustiniak and my old former professors, and now, you know, they're going to be my bosses again. But Kulnowski, they always wrote about, and they always preached really about diversified leadership in the schools. And that is a powerful thing. And district administrators who lead well are able to allocate tasks to certain people through referent power to diversify the leadership role to the school psychologists, school counselors, the school social workers, the teachers that are strong within their district, so that they don't assume so much of that role themselves and they're not burdened. You know, it's tough to be an administrator. It is so, it's a job that I wouldn't want, because they're under the political thumb of the nation right now. And so is our teachers. But I think we can really do good work if we work together and diverge on our power and realize that everybody has a place at the table and shares the meal, as opposed to, having the main course for themselves. Because when someone has the main course for themselves, everybody goes hungry, our children especially.
Well, and I think the other part of it is that every person at the table on an MTSS team has a different sort of point of reference with the student, right? You know, the teacher has that, you know, classroom time, but even you think about like a team meeting about a student, right? Like your different stakeholders, your parents, your interventionists, your teachers, even your administrator or school counselor or social, like whoever is interacting with that student has a different kinds of relationship with that student. And when you can come together to help make decisions, like all of those perspectives are so valuable. And so like when an administrator is building trust with his, with the, I say his, but anybody with their teacher or with their staff, like you're able to say like, we, all of your knowledge and expertise is valued and important and necessary when it comes to making decisions to help students. And it's like, this is a team effort. It's not, you know, like we all win when the student is being successful and doing, and, doing great things. And so, that's just such an important perspective, for leaders, I think, because you're right. It is such a hard job to be a leader, like, you know, not only to be a teacher in the classroom, but also to be leaders who have that response, bearing the responsibility of making decisions, right and wrong, right? Like they're the ones who answer for that. And you can see it, there's a huge turnover of principals and district leaders in this, you know, it's not just teachers that have been leaving, but administrators as well. And I think that that's part of like, of going when it's a team, when you're not only sharing some of that leadership, you're sharing your, that responsibility, that burden, and that helps lighten the load. And so that no one is weighed down by all that they have to do. And that's the beauty of MTSS. It really is like that teamed database decision-making stuff. And that's part of the beauty of it, that it's not just, it's about supporting the students, but it's also about adults as well, of like being empowered to make decisions together, with students. So, like I said, we could talk about these different areas all day. It's very interesting to get your perspective as a school psychologist, as a researcher. So what's something really exciting about the work and everything that you're doing right now?
I think the most exciting thing for me has been the application of MTSS outside, or exploring the application of MTSS outside of school systems for our rehabilitation centers and for our residential centers, with people with developmental disabilities, and starting to get the ball going in that area, because we've seen some success there and they're very structured similarly. And I think that you will see that come. Also, I really like the idea that MTSS is starting to make its way into juvenile justice centers. And that just has opened a wider door for the need of it and for the good. I think that one of the things I like most is seeing teachers happy, seeing people happy, seeing people be successful as a school psychologist. I've seen enough sad teachers in my day to see them smile. And, you know, that's the payment for me. You know, and to see the students happy, of course, but you really know you made a difference when, with MTSS, when a teacher buys into it, sees the success and sees the need for it, or when a day rehabilitation staff member goes, okay, well, you know, we don't have to keep this young man out of dayhab because they're being physically aggressive. We can remediate this behavior and address it just because it's severe and they got developmental disabilities. It's a more equitable stance. And also, one thing that I really leverage and I like dealing with now is seeing what the model can provide to equitable decision-making for marginalized students, people of color, Black Americans, you know, Asian Americans, Latina community, seeing how it can help them succeed, but also not face the same discriminatory practices that segregated them from our school system in the first place. That's what I'm really interested in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really true. It does help. I think implemented well, it can help address some of those inequities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I would love for you to talk a little bit. I know you've written several books, and so I don't want to like end the conversation without you. Tell us a little bit about the different books you have written, and like who they're for and how they can help with the MTSS process.
Yeah. So I wrote the most recent book, actually, probably the most general book that would apply to this is Multi-Tiered Systems of Support, A Preventative Guide to Practice. And it's by Sage. And it's generally for, educators and graduate students who really want a full-on understanding and a comprehensive understanding as to where MTSS came from, why we're doing it, why the old model wasn't working, and providing them culturally responsive practices within each intervention service delivery model within multi-acute systems of support. So in this book, I cover response to intervention, I cover school-wide positive behavior support, I cover social-emotional RPI, and I cover suicide prevention intervention. And then I go beyond that and I cover how this can work in a DAHAB setting and why it should be used in our DAHABs at the state agency level and at the community agency level. So it's a really broad book that really paints a good picture of it. The second book that I wrote, you know, this was the first book, and this was designed for the on-the-go educator. Like, hey, I have a basic understanding on TSS. I don't have time to read a textbook, Gary. Like, I don't have time to read this, all right?
I was going to say, the first one looks like a textbook, which is more impressive to have written, I think.
That is a textbook. But this one's where the on-the-go educator includes videos, it includes diagrams, and so does this one. This one includes, like, diagrams of how to navigate the tiers in special education, or not, the tiers of multi-tiered systems of support. Like, it will show you, like, you know, how to get there.
Oh, that's cool.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I provide the decision making on it you could make. And obviously, it's tailored. It could be tailored to your district. But those triangles really navigate positive behavior support, social emotional RTI, suicide prevention. What's the decision points? RTI. I do that in this book as well, but I do it with videos. And I consult with school psychologists for this book that are leading across the nation. And they did a wonderful job providing information. And the third book was implementing social emotional RPI using implementation science. So you talked about, you know, what structure, how to get started. Implementation science really takes you through how to do that. So we look at implementation science and how to implement that through universal tier one social emotional RPI. And that's the third book that came out. And then if people really, you know, just want something simple, I got a laminated guide out that will provide you information on those tiers. That's the simplest model. So I tried to cover all aspects to get accessibility in the teacher's hands to make it as simple as possible for them to understand this model and offer consultation services.
Well, that's fantastic. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, you know, because our podcast is fun, even though we talk about serious things, I always like to end on, you know, some kind of fun question. And I ask this knowing that, like, every person has such a different experience with school and all that kind of stuff. But for you, when you look back on your school experience, what's a fun memory that you have of, it could be like a favorite teacher, or it could be a class, or just an experience you're like, well, that was fun.
I, you know, it was my childhood in terms of education wasn't, admittingly that fun due to my disability and being segregated a lot. But the best moment I had was 12th grade. I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Mercurian. And at the time, I was taking creative writing with him. And he was so encouraging and taught me how to write. He painted pictures for me. He would tell me to paint. He told me I was great at it. It was the first time in my life in education, I think, that I heard that I was great. After being retained in kindergarten, after being, you know, segregated from my peers in the resource room, after being called the slow child, you know, throughout their academic career. And Mr. Mercurian, and not that other teachers did, but his, I guess his enthusiasm for me as a student and his belief in me as a student. And I made it, you know, I did good. But just to see that, he's still my model teacher. I will always take together what Mr. Mercurian taught me. And he taught at North Tonawanda High School. And I don't know if he's still there, but he was just the best at what he did. And he was the smartest teacher I ever had.
I love that. Like, yeah, I love that, you know, despite all, like, you know, the different difficulties or, like, experiences you had, like, thinking about how the enthusiasm of a teacher, it, for you as a student, sticks with you. Like, that's a powerful message to, I think, any educator. Well, Gary, thank you so much for talking with me today and sharing parts of your story and sharing your work with us. I know that it's just so great to, like, hear someone who is passionate about MTSS and passionate about helping educators and future educators understand how it can be helpful and preventative and help all of our students that need it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Alyssa. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.